Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning, Friday the 13th.
The Templars died on this day, right?
Yeah.
And they had it coming.
We say definitively. Is it Trick-a-Deck or Trisk-a-Deck?
It's Trisk-a-Deck-a-phobia, isn't it?
Trisk-a-Deck-a-phobia.
That's right.
Fear of Friday the 13th.
I got 13th. A song in my library, if you want. It's in 13-4 time. It's called Trisk-a-Deck-a-phobia.
Oh, that's
John
really
Weber.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we can.
All right, let's
have
not forget I mentioned it.
All right. All right. Making up the panel this morning, WAMC's Alan Shartok, who has no fear of today's day or any other day for that matter. Good morning, sir.
Absolutely not. My legs never shake.
No, absolutely
Except
not.
Except before the fun drive.
Oh, yeah. Then, and most nights about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. When the phone rings.
WAMC's newsman extraordinaire Ray Graff is in the house. Good morning, sir.
How you doing? And our
dear friend, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, who is with us because when Rosemary goes off to do whatever it is that Rosemary goes off to do, Mike is more than nice and comes in and helps us out.
And easily as controversial.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Thank you very much. All right, let me tell you how you can get in on the fun, and then we'll start with the issues on today's plate. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage. If you go to WAMC.org/roundtable, there's a post there that says 3/13/15, which is today's date, and you can just click on that, and you can post your comments, and all of us can see them and comment on them, and it makes it a very interactive community and a lot of fun, and we certainly direct your attention to that. Meanwhile, let us go to the topics for today. And we begin with what we talked about yesterday, which was a relatively new story then and now, as the dust has settled a bit, although the search goes on for the person responsible for shooting two police officers in Ferguson, Missouri. And in her 17 years as a city councilwoman, Kim Tian has not been afraid to speak against the powers in her own city. She was mentioned, she said, in the blistering Justice Department report about abuse of law enforcement in Ferguson for sharply criticizing the city's municipal judge. She has suggested that community service instead of fines be offered to municipal court defendants. And although she was once a Ferguson police officer, she said she had consistently supported peaceful protests in the aftermath of the fatal police shooting of an unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown. But Mrs. Tian's goodwill toward the protesters ran thin after four gunshots early Thursday seriously wounded two officers guarding the city's police station. Really two stories at work here. One, of course, is the actual criminal investigation of who fired the shots, and then also the fact that here is a city, a municipality that is very much in disarray, very much in great unrest. And as they were starting to make progress of removing people who were responsible and the reports were coming out, that these shootings are seen as a major setback in that and kind of reigniting this whole issue. So with that set up, I throw it out, and Alan, we'll start with you.
Well, I've been pretty clear on this, the guys who did these shootings are basically disgusting and really, really as bad as it gets in our society, and one can only guess at what their motives were. But they are despicable, and that we know. Police officers have a tremendous regard for public safety, a responsibility for public safety, and it seems to me that whoever did this really probably wanted to do what you're saying, Joe, throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing of bringing some order into Ferguson. And it looks to me like they're sort of getting their way. And that's terrible. But this is what we see on a worldwide basis when those people who just don't want peace will do anything, whether it's capturing some Israeli soldiers or whether it is doing something that will just disrupt everything that's going on. So you get a good woman like this councilwoman, and she doesn't know what to say or do, and that is clear.
It's. I want to say that all the news that we got yesterday on this particular situation, the good news, and there was some good news, was that the two officers were treated and released from the hospital. So the injuries were taken care of, and obviously they have much healing, but they were able to leave the hospital fairly quickly. So that was the good news. Mike?
Well, what's sad about it also is, you know, you turn on the cable news channels, and it's the same reporters with the same scenes. It's almost like deja vu. It's like back in last August, in the immediate aftermath of the killing of the young black man by a white police officer. And it almost just resets the clock. They're back where they were. And any progress, it seems now, that any progress that was made by the Justice Department investigation has received a big setback. And it must just leave people who have a legitimate reason to protest peacefully in the streets, it must just leave them completely undermined, you know, and it just takes all the wind out of the legitimate effort to try to, you know, work together and bring attention to the problems that do persist, you know, in Ferguson, Missouri and elsewhere.
And one other thing here, and that is, we've said it before, I've said it before, it isn't only Ferguson, obviously. There are those people who think if you cure the problem in Ferguson, then things temper down. But in fact, we have a national program and need a problem and a national dialogue on this.
And speaking of that dialogue, the president was on Jimmy Kimmel last night, Jimmy Kimmel Live on ABC, and said that whoever shot at police officers in Ferguson this week, quote, were criminals and should be arrested, but added that their action should not detract from the civil rights issues that have been raised. He said that protesters there had a legitimate right to be angry about their treatment at the hands of the police. So yep. Just what you're saying, Alan, of really the president trying to keep an eye on that, trying to keep the eye on the dialogue as far as not to lose ground on what's being discussed.
Yeah, it's hard to know why anyone would want to somebody who might be, you know, object to the way that the police have handled situations in Ferguson would resort to this tactic, because all it does is completely undermine that and suck the life out of the protest movement, because now they don't want to be associated with violence. And you know, you really have to wonder how stupid somebody could be to do something like that.
Just... Well, you know, Mike, stupid is a good word, or just committed to violence. There will always be those people. Every time there was a civil rights march, there were tons of marshals just to make sure that those people who would upset the apple cart were kept under control. And that is the case. That is the case here. They may be stupid, all right, and in the long run, there's no question that they are stupid. But it's more than that. It goes to motive. They could be the dumbest people in the world, and just a couple of, you know, mutts who grabbed a hold of a rifle and decided they were going to just start trouble right then. Or they could have a different purpose, which is to really make this thing worse than it is.
One of my favorite Alanisms is, see what I did there? So the president last night, when he was on TV, said that the acts in Ferguson were not unique, but also not the norm. So, Alan, what did he do there by saying that?
Not unique, but not the norm. I don't know, Joe. I'd have to think about that one, and so I send it right back to you.
Because I just, you know, you were talking about, and I agree right. with you, because you were saying earlier about how, you know, this is not unique to Ferguson. This is something
that
is going throughout our country and lives in so many of our municipalities, both urban and even rural.
Sure. Why do you think for a single second that Mayor de Blasio stopped the existing stop and frisk because the Justice Department was looking, everybody was looking at it, and everybody knew that if your chances were walking around while black, you were going to get stopped. And every once in a while, it'll come to a point of almost absurdity. David Gustina comes into our place every morning very, very early. And one morning, after all of this was going on, he got stopped. And I'm sure that there then becomes this business of, okay, stop everybody, just to show that you're not after one specific group. But of course, that doesn't make that real problem go away.
Well, no, and you know, if you have an opportunity to stop David,
yeah, absolutely. The entertainment value must have been phenomenal.
When they stop Mike on his way to the Times Union building,
I confess that there have been a few times over the years when it had something to do with the speedometer on my car.
Or it could have something to do with whatever clothing apparel you're wearing. Mm. That day, David was wearing a hoodie.
Mm. Oh, well, see, there you go. Well, now that we know,
now that you know more than you want to know.
Yeah, that's right. I still think that Mike, what do you make of that idea of being it's not unique, but it's not the norm.
Well, I think what he's trying to say, you know, plain and simple, take it for what it says literally. It unfortunately, these kinds of things are happening. You know, there's punks, as Eric Holder described, the person who shot the police officer, who are out there doing this kind of thing. But it is still not the norm. I think the president is trying to stress that most people are not this way. Most people are committed to equality and justice and civil rights. And you get these punks, and then you get the other extreme. You get bad actors on the other side and positions of authority where they, you know, deny people their civil rights and abuse them. So, but the norm is that most people are good, and certainly we have said here, you know, that a vast majority of police are committed to upholding law.
From what I saw last night, they have an idea. It would appear they have an idea of who possibly did this. So I suspect we will see some action along those lines very quickly.
They said the investigation was active. Yeah.
You know, there was a note from Bob this morning at roundtable at WAMC.org who said, could it be that the shooting was not committed by a black protester but by a relic of the KKK who wished to discredit the peaceful protesters? Well, you know, anything's possible.
Yeah, that's completely possible. It would have achieved the same result.
Well, we're going to is that it for the letters, that one? Do you want to do one more?
No, we have something from Pete from Tolan. Maiden Square, ring any bells? Protesters and police both shot in that case, and look what happened. I suspect inflammation of race relations. Alan is correct that the squeezing the poor through the unjust police, quote, taxation infractions is just the root of these troubles. All the best, Pete from Tolan.
All right.
That's what he said, and I think other than an interesting, Irene says, there are a few crackpots in all communities, Pike County, Pennsylvania, where two troopers were shot outside their barracks in October, resulting in one death, and the two New York City policemen were assassinated in December, and we can go on. It's worldwide as well. How do we prevent it? And Steve says, what about the possibility the police shooting was a setup? In 6 months or a year or two, we find out it was pro-police type's plan to undermine the real racist issues. And I think that's it.
All right. So let's take a break there, and we'll come back and continue our conversation for this roundtable panel. Our last of the week, we'll be back on Monday. But right now, we continue on this Friday the 13th. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Reintroduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Newsman Ray Graff and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us as well. And we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's go to some other issues that we can that we can talk about. And let's all right. So we've talked a lot this week about Hillary Clinton and email. And now it seems as though a lot of the email furor is right here in Albany. And we're having an email brouhaha. I'll let Mike set this up.
Yeah, it's in the
and
TU.
And then we'll talk about it.
Well, it has a lot less to do with Hillary Clinton and missing emails than it does with Governor Andrew Cuomo's policy of emails expiring in 90 days. And this was brought to light most recently by a court case involving a food truck owner who claims the state targeted them unfairly by kicking them out of the New York racing, well, out of the Saratoga race course. And in the court case, it's learned that some of the emails had been deleted, the pertinent emails, and that would be contrary to policy. And that's shed light on the policy that dates back several years before Governor Cuomo was in office. But a great column today by Jim Dwyer in the New York Times points out that back when these policies were set, you know, space was expensive. People needed to clean emails because it would clog servers. And now you can go in for like $50 and buy a terabyte of space. Most places, including New York State, are switching to new email cloud servers like Office 360, which really gives you unlimited capacity to store email. And why, if it's not an issue, would you want to get rid of email unless you're trying to hide something?
But wait, the state is going to cloud?
Yeah, they're going to Office 360, which is like a cloud-based kind of system.
Boy, I would think that there would be security.
Oh, no, you can nail it down pretty tight. And the governor has actually asked for a review, and it looks like there's some movement now in the efforts to change the policy. Of course, it won't affect the legislature, which can delete anything they want anytime sure. they want or keep anything they like, and they don't have to tell anybody because they're immune.
They kept themselves out of it. But you want to know my favorite part of all of this? When is the last time you heard Andrew Cuomo saying, yeah, that was something good that Spitzer did before I got here? In other words, never. So now we're hearing this is all Spitzer's fault because this comes from the Spitzer administration. That's unbelievable.
That's right.
That's unreal. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No. Eric Schneiderman, the current attorney general, his office did inherit that policy from the Cuomo attorney generalship,
right.
who inherited it from Governor Spitzer when he was the attorney general. And now they're all saying, well, maybe it's not such a good policy, and we ought to look at it a little bit more. And that looks like they're going to do that.
Well, as the old song goes, if you knew Andrew like I know Andrew, let me tell you that right now this is just one more thing that he's got to deal with. So he calls for some kind of cooperation on this. But I'll bet he's angry at Schneiderman. I'd bet anything, because Schneiderman upends him. He says, okay, it's always so simple. I'm changing the whole rule for the Attorney General's office. Remember where you used to be, Mr. Governor. So there's always a contentious part of this. If you look behind the closed door, I am sure that that Andrew is now gnashing his teeth over Schneiderman doing this to him and seeing it as a shot.
Right. It's good to know, too, that the comptroller, the other statewide elected official, yes, his office never had a policy of throw emails away quickly. They've kept them.
Well, let's ask the panel, what would be an acceptable length of time to keep email? Presumably, you can't keep them forever unless they're pertinent to something big that has happened. But at what point, eventually, even a terabyte? We'll run out of space. So when do you guys think it's appropriate to delete email?
Well, nobody is smarter about things internet and computer than you are, Ray.
Well, Bill Gates.
So instead of saying, let's ask the panel, what do you think we should do or should be done?
This is government records policy, and I don't know. I mean,
smart. You're incredibly
10
smart.
Years?
Nobody, 10 years sounds good to me. 15 years sounds even better. You know, I mean, as long, or how about this? when, like we do at WAMC, when we're running out of space on what it's called, the DAD, right? Am I right about that?
Digital audio delivery, something or other.
And everybody gets a note saying, clean out your mailboxes because we got too much stuff in there and we can't go forward. How about that, Ray?
Okay, there are really no mailboxes in the DAD system, but I get your point. Clear out your data.
Oh, now.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. But we do keep, like, here's an example, and as far as a journalist, you keep record of pretty much all your stories anyway, and keep we keep our scripts for at least the last 5 years.
And then we send them to the Radio Museum, the Hall of Fame.
And the reason for that is it's protective for us. On a regular basis, people will call and say, you said, and then we say, no, we didn't. Here's the script.
Well, there might be historical value. You know, you'll interview somebody. Right.
Yeah, don't we send stuff to the University at Albany?
That's actually, we send audio files, but that's different than...
Yeah.
And this is also different. I mean, this isn't like sending your documents or your legislation and keeping like your congressional record. This is your everyday mundane email, and how long do you keep that for on your system, and what is the actual value of that over a length of time?
So what have we all learned from all of this?
Yes, Professor?
Keep it longer than 90 days. That's probably one thing. But
we learned that, but we also learned watch what you say, because there is no privacy in your email, right? Sooner or later, either somebody's watching it now or somebody's going to ask you for it later.
But this goes back. I mean, even if you wrote a letter to somebody, the recipient is going to have a copy of it, and they can do whatever they want with it, and they can make it public or not public.
The former Secretary of State points that out, that the recipients of all her emails are all still on the State Department servers.
Yeah, so it's their fault.
Yeah,
I get it.
Anyway, but I mean, what about someone sends you this really big video file that they want you to look at, and it's clogging up your email server with a bunch of things like that? You should be able to delete them. Is this saying that state employees and state agencies can't even delete the recipe email that your cousin Larry sent you for St. Patrick's Day drinks or something like that? I don't know. There has to be some discretion permissible in the maintenance of email, it seems to me.
In the New York Times article, it says, by day's end, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that he wanted to get together with all the top elected officials and figure out a practical plan that would include the Freedom of Information Law, one that would cover the legislature, which has resisted its provisions for decades. That was a sensible turnabout for the governor, says the New York Times. For the last month, as some advocates of open government were calling for change to the 90-day deletion rule, Mr. Cuomo's administration was standing firm, defending a policy that was no longer needed. What in the name of self-inflicted wounds, you might have wondered, was Governor Cuomo up to? Probably not giving it all that much attention. Then it got to be bad weather for email as the storm over Mrs. Clinton's emails in the garage or wherever gathered strength. Legislators talked up bills that would have required that state emails be kept for up to 7 years and then enter the governor back into the conversation.
Don't you love to put yourself in the room when the governor, Andrew Cuomo, is thinking about what to do? You know, when the guy throws the fastball, you know, do you take it or do you swing? What do you do? Who do you think is responsible for your woes? I mean, that to me is the crux of how Andrew Cuomo operates.
And for this particular woe, who do you think is at the crux?
Well, I think there's room enough for everybody. As I said before, I think Eric Schneiderman, of course, is probably not on the birthday list of Andrew Cuomo right now. I am sure that the legislature, now remember that he the governor, who I call affectionately Andrew, is thinking about you know, the legislature and his reputation in Albany. So he goes after the legislature. He puts everything down in the budget document, which we all remember he has the right to do now because of a law case called Silver versus Pataki. And he says, okay, I want to know everything about you. I want to know about your wives. I want to know about your girlfriends. I want to know about all of this. And everybody says, yay, Andrew, good for you, right? Now, along, and they say back, okay, fine, but then we want to know exactly what you're up to, Andrew. We want to know about your girlfriend. We want to know about how much money she's making. And then the Cuomo people, thinking they're very bright, go back and say, okay, we not only want to know about your wives, but we want to know about your girlfriends. And no, and by
your
the way,
wives and your girlfriends.
That's
right.
Right.
Right. Not mutually exclusive. Right.
And then, they are mutually exclusive, unfortunately. And then there's quiet from all around. Because which legislator is going to pipe right up and say, wait a second, I think my girlfriend is off limits. I don't think anybody's doing that. So, and there is...
What girlfriend? They don't have girlfriends.
And remember the Bear Mountain Compact, in which once the train passes or the car passes Bear Mountain, everything stays in Albany, you know, like Las Vegas. So so this is interesting. If you to bring it back, if you're Andrew Cuomo, there is so much going back and forth. Or as his papa Mario once said to me, anybody can think one step in advance. But can you think six steps in advance? Those are the good ones, and that's what's going on right now.
So meanwhile, you go to Washington, and a story in the New York Times this morning of which is really it's funny because they start off by saying Attorney General Eric Holder used an email alias name for the Motown group The Temptations. Lisa Jackson, a former Environmental Protection Agency administrator, used Richard Windsor, a combination of her dog's name in a New Jersey town, for her electronic alter ego. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter keeps his personal and government emails separate on two different BlackBerries, but two of his predecessors never even used email for official business. So now members of the president's cabinet, they have a wide variety of strategies and shortcuts and tricks for handling their email. And there was really no law setting out precisely what they had to do with it. And so now with Hillary's disclosure that she exclusively used a private email address, now it's pretty much the question is, it's always been up to the individual agency of how they wanted to handle it. And now they're thinking, well, they have to have more of a system in place. And I guess my question/comment to that is I'm kind of shocked they didn't already have a system in place.
It being 2015
right.
At all.
Email's been around for quite a while now. But better late than never, and now figure out what they're going to do.
I wonder what Carlos Danger thinks about all this.
Carlos Danger is the alias of Andrew Weiner, the former congressman. Right.
Weirdly back in the news, too. All right.
Why is he back in the news? What did he do?
I'll tell you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you tell us on the air?
Tell me later?
Yeah, I'll tell you later.
Oh, boy. I've not heard this either.
No, it's
intrigue.
It's by association. By association.
But also, I just like to say it because there should be a pantheon to all of the guys who did stupid things in politics in their lives. And he's right there at the top, maybe three or four, sending pictures of his junk out over the email.
Right. All right.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. The woman.
Sorry I brought it up.
The woman that. Well, so now that you brought it up.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
But,
it's
but,
my
the,
fault.
No, but well, the woman Sydney Leathers, the who he was sexting with.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I think we should define sexting for the few who don't know it. It's when you send email. It's when you send it. Right.
A text message that might carry language or images that are about sex.
When you're showing the full danger. Okay.
Not every full danger. Yeah. Everybody doesn't know that.
Fine.
Okay. Well, and it doesn't necessarily have to be pictures. It could just be suggestive talk.
Text, right?
Ask Steve Croft.
Why are we doing this?
So, anyway.
Because it's interesting. You don't know where it's going to go.
I was asking about the Anthony Weiner. He was back in the news.
Great.
So Sydney Leathers, who he sent the sexts to, has a new recipient, and it is an Indiana state lawmaker.
Oh, terrific!
Yeah, so she's moved on.
And really, you know, when you look at it, I don't think it was Anthony Weiner's fault. I think it was his parent. I think it was his parents' fault. I mean, they gave him his name.
Hmm.
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's other people.
Well, getting back to the email in general.
Okay, thanks.
There are some criticisms today because Lindsey Graham and other others high up officials are saying they don't use email. And do you think that that admission is should be embarrassing to a top politician?
Yes.
Yeah. I found that stunning. That some people are almost saying proudly, "I never use email."
Well. If you are in a position of power, you can presumably just tell your staff to send the email to Secretary so-and-so.
Which is what probably happens, and it also probably...
Yeah, but here again, if the emails that you have for that Hillary Clinton was saying that she was keeping out of planning her daughter's wedding or her mother's funeral or things like that, I mean, still there's a use of email to have someone... proudly say, "I've never sent an email in my life," just seems out of touch to me.
Yeah, it's 2015. That is the way we communicate.
Yes,
it's one of the ways we communicate.
Go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say, when you're ready, I'll read some letters.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll go into a letter fury, and then we'll end up with our last story. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMT comes from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Ave in Albany. Offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty items, and prepared foods, honestweight.coop. Temple Emmanuel, Kingston, hosting the annual Women's Cedar, a potluck vegetarian Passover meal, open to all, Sunday, March 22nd at 5 p.m., templeemmanuelkingston.org. And High Meadow School, Stone Ridge, New York, now enrolling children ages 3 to 16 for Summer on the Meadow, week-long camps, wayfinder experience, archaeology, little acorns, and more, HighMeadowSchool.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. We have a few minutes left. We want to probably get to another issue or so, but before we do that, we'll go to letters.
Letters. We get letters. Okay. So from Michael, who says, "Don't call him that. Hi, gang. It seems that the only source used for these programs is the New York Times. Does the station not have a subscription to the Wall Street Journal or other major publications? Maybe change the name to Joe Reads the Times." Just a thought. Let me just respond to that, if I may, Joe. Every night, you know, Joe works about 14 hours a day. And every evening we get, just before I go to bed around 7 or 7:30, we get everything from the Wall Street Journal to the Daily News to the New York Post, you name it. We get it, and Joe gives it to us. And so when you say just a thought, that's what it is, just a thought. Jeff says, "I can say with unhindered honesty that I've never sent an email in my life." All right.
Of course, he says this via email.
His email.
That's
right.
Very ironic and hilarious.
And Kim says, "I almost spit out my coffee laughing when I heard Dr. S at C say junk in reference to Anthony Weiner."
Yeah,
okay. And Eric says, "If you talk to many young people, you'll learn that both email and phone calls are passé. They communicate exclusively via text and social media." And let's see.
He's right.
Bennett R says, "Dr. Shartok is right. Ferguson is not the only place where this kind of thing goes on. Dr. Shartok once hosted a Vox Pop where callers told story after story of experience of discrimination around the Hudson Valley. I still remember that Vox Pop and commend WMC for the courage to open that up as a topic for discussion. I hope Vox Pop will have it as a topic again." You can count on
yes,
it.
Yes, but not today. We're doing pies. So
it's Food Friday.
Hard-hitting
pies, right?
Story that's much on everyone's lips, pies.
Well, it is Pie Day.
Yeah, well, tomorrow, right?
Well, wasn't there some terrible guy in history who made mincemeat pies out of people?
The barber of Fleet Street, right? What was it? The barber
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
Well, we won't be serving that one today.
Yeah.
We once had a babysitter, the Shartok twins, who told us that story, okay? And how the barber chair went down into a shaft and they were killed and cut up. And I didn't sleep for the next 20 years. In fact, I probably am still not sleeping. As a result,
we'd like to apologize to all members of the barber profession.
Right. Yes, any demon barbers who happen to live on Fleet Street.
And to be clear, we won't be doing that on Vox Pop today. Just make sure
no
that
meat
you know
pies.
That.
Who's
no.
making your pies today, Ron?
Ah, Deanna Fox, who hasn't killed anyone today, as far as I know.
Yeah, and then and let's see here. Good morning, panel. I've worked in local and county government for over 27 years since the beginning of handheld devices. I've always kept two phones devices. My feeling is that even though I'm a governed, quote, official, life still must be kept separate. Nothing clandestine about it. And by the way, I do know persons in government in this day and age that do not use email. That's what Kamish had to say to us. And let's see here. Yeah. Okay. And where are we? I think, Luca says, "Oh, right. How do those in Congress who so proudly don't use emails vote? You vote electronically, but I don't think you vote by email. Am I missing something here, guys?"
No, I don't know.
I think it's push a button, don't they?
Right, they push a button, and yeah, I don't.
That's what I got so far, Joe. Do you see anything else?
No.
Okay.
You skipped the one you should have.
Okay. Everybody wants to know what.
Yeah,
they
me too.
No, you don't.
No,
you
terrible,
don't. No,
mean.
We're not allowed to. No, none of the above. It
hilarious.
Was very funny, actually.
Okay.
But we just.
I can't wait to see it when I get off the air.
Just can't say it.
Oh boy.
All right, so there we go. Let's move on to our final story on the in the hit parade here. as I bring it up on the big machine. All right. When we look at where's Vladimir Putin? Where did he go? Where the hell did he go? Where is he missing?
He's with Carmen Santiago.
Yeah. No, he's with a secret meeting with the North Korean, leader.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because remember he disappeared for a while too, and everybody thought he was dead or that something had happened, and then there he was again. You know, this guy Putin, he keeps himself really in good shape. He's a black belt in judo or whatever they call that, and he is physically fit, and so who knows where he is.
Everybody, according to the Washington Post story that we're sort of discussing today.
Oh yeah, the Washington Post.
This
story.
Isn't the first time there's been speculation about Putin's health or that he hasn't been seen in public for a while. Back in 2012, there were all kinds of rumors that he trying to figure out why he was briefly absent from the public eye. He's probably off on some tryst someplace or having a great vacation or maybe a tiger hunting expedition or
invading
something
a
like
Baltic
that.
State, something whimsical like
too,
that.
Yeah.
Maybe a tryst on a tiger hunting expedition.
Why not?
Maybe a tryst with a tiger.
Yeah. All right.
Well, his spokesperson says, "Bite your tongue. Everything's fine."
Yes. Ask Beria.
He was absolutely.
Now that's funny, Ray. That is really, really funny. Ask Beria. Khrushchev called him into a room with a bunch of guys. He came in. They arrested him. Put your hands up, and he was never seen again.
Yeah, interesting.
Right, quite right.
His spokesman said that his handshake was so strong it could break your hand.
Yep.
That was the official comment from the
good
from the Kremlin.
And what about his eyesight? As Bush said, President Bush said, "I looked into his eyes and I know he's a good man."
There you go. Well, we'll see. This all comes, by the way, of several cancellations of important meetings and trips that he was expected to attend and at the last minute did not attend. And so that is fueling this speculation. And it has now been several days. Is it 10 days, Mike? Is that what we're?
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah.
About 10 days since the president has
seen
been
in public.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, we are out of time. I want to thank everyone who wrote in and who continues to write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. We love hearing from you. And my thanks to Alan. Alan, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Joe.
All right. And Raymond, thank you very much.
Thanks, all. It was fun.
Yeah. You ready for whiskey now?
Yes.
And Mike Spain, always a pleasure. Thank you very much, Mike.
Happy to be here. Enjoy your pie later today.
Ah, yes, the pie.
Mince meat.
Yeah. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.